You're listening to a Peak Media production.
And now, coming to you from the Windy City, it's The Daily Dime with your host, Tim Keller.
Welcome everyone to this Monday edition of The Daily Dime. Today is April 28th, and we had a ton of action this weekend between the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, the NFL draft, just so much going on. So let's talk about it. All right, so we'll start off with the NBA playoffs. We had four games on Saturday, four games on Sunday. And the first one I wanted to talk about was the Cavs and Heat on Saturday. Cavs ended up winning this one 124-87 in Miami to take a 3-0 series lead. It is the worst Heat playoff loss in the history of their franchise, 37 points. And Darius Garland didn't even play. So they were just kind of building off of that game two win, up 3-0 now, basically trending towards a sweep. It seems like the Heat have just lost any hope that they previously had. And again, this is where the Cavs are just so deep. You don't even have Darius Garland, and you get 22 from Jared Allen, 19 from Mobley, 18 from Strus. He only had 13 points from Donovan Mitchell. He was 4 for 14 from the field. Not his best game. He only had one assist, two rebounds, and they still won by 37. They got 21 from DeAndre Hunter off the bench, 13 from Ty Jerome. Even Jalen Tyson had 7 points. Okoro had 9. Just across the board, great game from the Cavs. And this series is essentially over at this point. I don't think there's really too much more to say. And what was even crazy about this game was the Heat actually started off pretty decent. Like, they were up 15-6, and then the Cavs, just like game two, another Cavalanche. They went on a 33-6 run, and that was pretty much it. The game was essentially over at that point. Tyler Hero didn't have a great game. He had just 13 points in 37 minutes. Bam probably had the best game for them. He had 22 points and 9 boards, but aside from that, they were just not great and just could not keep up with Cleveland. So anyway, yeah, 3-0 Cavs, and not looking great for the Heat. Then we had game four between the Thunder and the Grizzlies in Memphis, with the Thunder coming into this one leading the series 3-0, and the Grizzlies did not have Ja in this one, but they actually kept it really tight. You thought they might just roll over coming into this one. You know, the series is essentially over. No one's ever come back from down 3-0, and you don't have your best player, but they actually stayed in this one the whole game. It was a tight game back and forth, but they just could not get over the hump. And that's one of the biggest things with some of these young teams, is learning how to win and closing out games, and they just weren't able to do it, and Oklahoma City was. This is probably SGA's best game of the series. He finished with 38 on 13 for 24 shooting, so a super efficient night from him. They had 11 points and 12 boards from Hartenstein, who's been a little bit more quiet in this series, so pretty good game from him. And they got 23 points from Jalen Williams. But anyway, so they close it out. They win 4-0, completing the sweep, and will move on to the second round to play the winner of the Nuggets and the Clippers. And speaking of the Nuggets and the Clippers, we had game four between them as well following that one in LA. And the Nuggets won this one 101-99 in a crazy game. So it was really tight throughout the whole first half. And then Denver pulled away in the third. They were up by 22 at one point. And then the Clippers came all the way back. The game is tied as the clock is expiring. Like, Nuggets have the ball at the end of the game. And Jokic just heaves up like a Hail Mary three, basically. And he misses it bad, but no one boxes out. Clippers all get caught ball watching. And Aaron Gordon goes up and dunks it as time expires. And it was about as close as you can get to releasing the ball, like having it out of his hands before the clock expired. I mean, it was literally like frame by frame. I'm still not even convinced that it actually got out of his hand. I mean, it was that close. It really could have gone either way. But they countered it regardless. So the Nuggets get a huge win to tie the series at 2. Would have been really tough for them, I think, going down 3-1, even though Game 5 will be back in Denver. But gives them a much better chance to win this series now. As I said, tied at 2 going into Game 5. They'll play again on Tuesday back in Denver. Then we had Houston and Golden State to close out the Saturday slate. And this one was back and forth. No one really was able to take control of this one throughout most of the game. But then down the stretch in the fourth quarter, Steph was just awesome again. They pulled away. He had 36 points on a game where Jimmy Butler did not play, and they didn't get a huge game from really anyone else. Most of the starters really struggled in this one. They only got 7 from Draymond, which, you know, isn't too far off from his typical game, but he was only 3 for 11 from the field, so not super efficient. They got 7 from Kuminga, 2 from Post, 10 from Pozemski. And so it was really all Steph in terms of the starters, but they did have really big games from Buddy Hield and Gary Payton off the bench. They had 17 and 16 respectively on pretty efficient nights. They were combined 13 for 22 and they hit 7 threes. So huge games from them to keep them in it, give the Warriors a 2-1 series lead, which they really needed playing at home. Now I think they have some room here. If they fall in game 4 still at home, then, you know, it's tied and not the end of the world. But if they win, they're definitely in control of this series. So huge game from the Warriors to get the dub there without Jimmy. Then on Sunday, we had 4 more games, starting off with the Knicks and the Pistons. This was another really tight game. The Knicks actually went up relatively early, but then Detroit came back starting off in the second half. And they actually looked like they were in command of this one, kind of like basically the rest of the games in the series. And then the Knicks came back and they took the lead. And this one was a super physical game, you know, unlike some of the other games that we've seen in the Eastern Conference. But Cat had a huge game in this one for the Knicks, probably his best game of the series so far. He finished with 27, including 5 threes from the big man. Brunson was great again. He had 32. But this one, we had a lot of controversy at the end. Cade was great. He ended up with 25 and he had a shot from about the free throw line, maybe around the elbow, wide open to win it. He misses. They get the board, ends up being kicked out to Tim Hardaway, and he takes a 3 in the corner, which would have been for the win. And it looked like Josh Hart fouled him in real time, but they don't call it. Knicks end up winning 94-93 to take a 3-1 series lead. And everyone just went wild though in Little Caesars. I mean, it was like, immediately, oh God, I'm blanking on the coach's name. Anyway, the Pistons coach runs out, Bickerstaff, that's what it is. He runs out and he's, you know, he's freaking out at the refs and everyone else's. And the refs even admitted after the game that they missed the call before the 2-minute report even came out. And, I don't know, looking at it, Hart probably shouldn't have been that close. I thought Hardaway made a little bit too much of an act around the shot. I think if he just shoots it normal and still gets that same contact, then he probably gets the call. But anyway, doesn't get the call. Knicks end up winning. A bunch of controversy at the end, but all in all, Knicks now lead the series 3-1, and it feels like this one's just about over heading back to New York. It's got to be super frustrating if you're the Pistons, because it feels like you could be up 3-1 in the series very easily. But here you are, roles reversed, and you know, it's a young team, probably didn't have expectations as high, but you had a real chance to move on to the second round and beat a pretty good team in the Knicks. And it feels like it's just slipping away at this point. But anyway, the next game we had was then between the Lakers and the Timberwolves in Minnesota. And this game was honestly very similar to the first one. It was super physical. Minnesota made it very clear that they were just going to try and bully the Lakers all night. And it didn't really work early on. The Lakers were just hitting their shots, and that was kind of all that mattered. And looked like they had control of this one, but down the stretch, they played the same lineup the entire second half. It was LeBron, Luka, Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves, and Dorian Finney-Smith, and literally played them the entire second half, which feels crazy for a 40-year-old LeBron. And you could tell coming down the stretch, like a lot of their shots were short. They were really struggling on defense, especially Luka and Reeves. And I don't know, I really like JJ Redick as a coach, but I'm not sure if this was the best move. I feel like if you could have just got them a few minutes in there, at least with Vanderbilt or someone that could play a little bit better defense. But obviously that just didn't happen. And down the stretch, Minnesota ends up winning this one 116-113. And like I said, very much like how Detroit feels. If you're the Lakers, you probably feel like you should be up 3-1 in this series. But here they are again, roles reversed. And also similar to the first game, there were some really questionable calls down the stretch where they actually admitted also in the 2-minute report where Luka had gotten fouled on a play. He would have been shooting free throws to take the lead. You know, they end up turning the ball over. It kind of changed the entire direction of the game. And then even on one of the last possessions, LeBron had stripped Anthony Edwards, and they end up with some like what looked like drone footage to overturn the call. And in a game where they let them be so physical the entire time, you know, he barely touches his wrist as he strips him. And they end up calling a foul on that. And that was essentially the game. So I mean, I don't think the refs completely decided the game in that one, but it's got to be super frustrating when they've called a game one way the whole time where these guys are getting bear hugged and just pushed, and then a tiny slap on the wrist ends up getting called in one of the biggest moments of the game. So, you know, LeBron, it was really interesting. He had a weird game. In the past few years, you can tell he's kind of had to pick his spots here and there, just, you know, trying to conserve his energy. But it's typically been on defense where he hasn't had as much effort, and then you'll see him be able to put in that effort on offense, and largely because they had Anthony Davis and they needed him to score, but you could rely on AD defensively. And now it's kind of the opposite with Luka, where he's a little bit more of a liability on defense, but he can handle the scoring. And so you saw LeBron not score in the fourth quarter. I think he only took one or two shots, but he was incredible defensively. He had a couple other steals. He had a huge block all down the stretch. And so even though he took a ton of criticism, but he finished with 27 points on only 9 shots. And he had 12 rebounds, 8 assists. He had 3 steals, 3 blocks, and only 3 turnovers in 46 minutes. So, you know, I think it's really hard to be too critical of him in that moment, especially playing 46 minutes and including the entire second half in year 22 with almost 70,000 career minutes played at 40 years old. It's just insane. So anyway, they lose. It looks pretty bleak for them too, even though they head back to LA for game 5. Even if they win game 5, I think they probably lose game 6. So, not the best outlook for the Lakers. Stat-wise, as I mentioned, LeBron had 27 and kind of filled the stat sheet in the rest of the categories. Luka had 38, another big game from him, even though he wasn't great on the defensive end. And then Rui Hachimura actually had a really big game too. He had 23, including 5 threes. But yeah, I mean, those guys played the entire second half. They all had big minutes, so you'd expect them to have a lot of points. And then Anthony Edwards was huge for the Timberwolves. He finished with 43, ended up with 17 free throw attempts, including a bunch down the stretch there, as I mentioned. And Randall was awesome too. He had 25 points, but he was all over the place defensively. Just a huge game from him. So yeah, it looks like the Timberwolves are probably going to move on. But you know, anything can happen. We saw the Cavs and LeBron come back and from down 3-1 in 2016. I think we saw another 3-1 comeback, maybe the Nuggets, I want to say, in 2020. So it's possible, but I would say unlikely, but we'll see what happens. Then following that, we had the Celtics and the Magic in Orlando. Celtics came into this one leading the series 2-1, and another huge game from Tatum in this one. He had 37 points on 25 shots. He also had 14 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. So great game from him. And it's kind of been the same story all series where Paolo was awesome for the Magic. Wagner was really good again. But the Celtics are just too good. They're just too deep. And yeah, so they get the win 107-98 and to take a 3-1 series lead. And again, just their depth is just too much. Their defense is very good, but you get 37 from Tatum, 21 from Brown, 19 from Kristaps, 18 from Derek White. And the Magic just don't have the horses to keep up with them. So I think this will probably end in 5, I'm assuming, back in Boston. Unfortunate for the Magic, and it's been an up and down season for them, but I still think they have a bright future, and we'll probably end up with the Celtics here in the second round after Tuesday night. And then the final game on Sunday, we had the Pacers and the Bucks, and the Pacers just kind of steadily blew the Bucks out of this one. They outscored them in every single quarter. They went on to win 129-103. Giannis was really solid again, but Dame ended up tearing his Achilles in this one, so he only played 6 minutes, and I think that was pretty much their only hope. Even though, like, it sounds crazy to say this is probably Giannis's worst game, even though he had 28, 15, and 6. But they just need him to be Superman, especially with Dame out, and it's just not enough for the way this Pacers team is playing right now. And they did get a big game from Kevin Porter Jr. off the bench. He had 23 points, but aside from that, they didn't really have a lot going. And so now Indiana is up 3-1 in that series, and I think they'll probably also close it out in 5 on Tuesday night. But yeah, so that is pretty much what we had from the NBA this weekend. In the NHL, we also had a bunch of games. The Lightning beat the Panthers 5-1 to cut the series lead to 2-1. I think the road team has won every game in that series so far. Then we had an overtime game between the Knights and the Wild, where the Knights went on to win 4-3 to tie that series at 2. And the Senators beat the Maple Leafs also in overtime 4-3. They were down 3-0 in that series, so they extended, but it looks like Toronto's still going to win that one. And then the Avalanche shut out the Stars 4-0 to tie that series at 2. Then on Sunday, we had another 4 games. The Blues beat the Jets 5-1 to tie that series at 2. The Hurricanes beat the Devils 5-2 to take a 3-1 series lead. The Capitals also took a 3-1 series lead in a 5-2 win over the Canadiens, where they scored 4 goals in the fourth period. And then we had a final overtime game of the weekend with the Oilers beating the Kings 4-3 to tie that series at 2 as well. The other big storyline from this weekend was obviously the NFL draft. We talked a little bit about it on Friday after the first round on Thursday. And the biggest storyline from the weekend was really Shedeur Sanders falling. We know he wasn't picked in the first round, obviously, last time that we had an episode. But we thought he might get picked with the first pick of the second round on Friday. But obviously that did not happen. And then he just kind of kept falling and falling. And as other teams took some quarterbacks, you're starting to think like, man, I don't even know where he has the possibility to go. And he ends up going all the way in the fifth round at pick 144 to the Browns. But what was crazy about that was the Browns had already taken Dylan Gabriel in the third round, the quarterback from Oregon. So we'll get into that a little bit more, but I wanted to look at some of the other quarterbacks that were taken. So we only had one other quarterback in the second round. It was Tyler Shaw out of Louisville. He went to the Saints at pick 40. And then we had two other picks on Friday, with Jalen Milroe going to the Seahawks towards the end of the third round. And then, as I mentioned, Dylan Gabriel getting taken by the Browns just after that. So those were the picks on Friday. Shedeur ended up going in the fifth round on Saturday. And then we had Kyle McCord going to the Eagles, Will Howard going to the Steelers, Riley Leonard going to the Colts, Graham Mertz going to the Texans. And then the Raiders took two quarterbacks, Tommy Mellett out of Montana State and Cam Miller out of North Dakota State. Those were all in the sixth round. And then Curtis Rourke and Quinn Ewers got taken in the seventh round by the 49ers and the Dolphins respectively. And there were a lot of questions about Quinn Ewers, like should he have just entered the transfer portal instead of entering the draft? Which is crazy because considering a year ago, if he would have left, then he probably would have been like a top 5, top 10 pick. And now here he is getting taken 231st overall and probably going to make way less money than he would have made if he entered the transfer portal and went and played somewhere else, assuming that Texas was going to play Arch Manning. So kind of have to wonder if that was really the right decision or not. But, you know, if he believes in himself, you know, it's hard to blame him for realizing his NFL dream. And honestly, like Miami's not the worst spot for him. Tua's obviously had some of the injury concerns. They don't have a ton of depth. So, you know, maybe he ends up getting some playing time in the near future. But as I mentioned, the Browns ended up taking two quarterbacks. And that was one of the teams I wanted to talk about because I just thought they had a really interesting draft. Obviously, from the start where they traded with Jacksonville early on in the first round, where they... Everyone thought they were going to take Travis Hunter at number 2, but they move back to 5, get somewhat of a haul to do so, and they end up taking Mason Graham, who I think is really solid, the D-tackle out of Michigan. And then they open up the second round on Friday. Like I said, thought they might take Sanders there, but they end up taking Carson Schwechsinger out of UCLA. And then with their other pick that they got from the Jags, they got Quinshon Judkins. Jeez, can't talk. The running back from Ohio State, who I think is really solid as well. He ran for over 1,000 yards this year while still splitting time with Travion Henderson. And, you know, big, strong back. I think he's going to do really well in that offense. And then they also ended up getting Harold Fannin, the tight end out of Bowling Green in the third round, which a lot of people liked. He was super productive this past year. I will say sometimes it looks like he's running in cement when he's in the open field. But I think it's kind of hard to argue with that pick. And then they rounded out the third round with that Gabriel pick, which was seemed like a little bit of a reach in the moment. And I think it had some people scratching their heads. But then in the fourth round, they take Dylan Sampson, another running back from Tennessee, and then they get Shedeur in the fifth round. So really interesting draft from them. I think they got really good value from some of these guys. Obviously overhauled the running back room, assuming Nick Chubb won't be back. They end up with Judkins and Samson, two guys who performed really well in the SEC, and then Judkins, you know, for Ohio State after he transferred. They get a really nice pick at linebacker in the second round. Mason Graham helps them shore up the D-line. But then you take two quarterbacks too, and it makes me kind of wonder, like, you know, how much did they do to really improve the team in the short term? I don't know if either of those guys are going to play this year. I'd be really surprised, because now they have a QB room with five quarterbacks. Watson presumably won't play after the Achilles injury, but you still have Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and then both the rookies. And so I don't know if either of those guys help right away. The running backs probably do, even though you also have Jerome Ford. But then you take Fannin, who, again, I like the pick, but you already have Njoku, so I don't know how much help that is either, besides, you know, their first two picks on the defensive side. So interesting draft from them. I know a lot of people love this draft from them, but we'll obviously see how it plays out in the future. I think it has the potential to be a really solid draft, especially if one of the quarterbacks plays out. But really hard to tell early on here with some of the redundant picks. Another team that I wanted to talk a little bit more about was the Giants. I thought they had a really interesting draft too. They got Abdul Carter with the third overall pick, who a lot of people thought might be the best player overall in this draft. And they trade back up in the first round to get Jackson Dart, who a lot of people think will fit pretty well with Brian Daboll there. So I think they were kind of trying to pull somewhat of the like strategy that Houston did a couple years ago, where they got CJ Stroud and Will Anderson in the first round. Now, obviously both of those guys were in the top three. But I'm assuming that's kind of the strategy here, where you get a cornerstone piece on defense and your franchise quarterback. But again, this is also a very convoluted QB room. Now you have Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, Jackson Dart, and you still have Tommy DeVito in there as well. So it'll be curious to see how that plays out. Especially if either Russ or Jameis start to struggle at some point throughout the season. And then I really like some of these other picks too. They got Darius Alexander, the D tackle from Toledo in the third round, and Cam Scadaboo in the fourth, who we know is just a dog at running back. We saw him in the playoff for Arizona State. So also could be a very interesting draft from the Giants. Like I said, if both those guys at the top pan out, then you're kind of looking at a team just like the Texans who could turn it around really quick. But also could get very messy in that QB room. So curious to see how that plays out throughout the season. Another team I really liked was the Falcons. I thought they had some really, really solid picks, especially helping to shore up that defense. They went with Jalen Walker. He fell to them at 15. He's the DN from Georgia. Then they traded back up in the first round to get James Pierce, the DN from Tennessee. And then they got what I thought was a steal, getting Xavier Watts, the safety from Notre Dame, later in the third round. And then they took another safety and then an offensive tackle from Wisconsin. So nothing super, super flashy from the Falcons, but just felt like a really solid draft to me. Just where I feel like we'll be talking about some of these guys in the years to come. And then another team that I thought did really well was the Ravens. Of course, it seems like they always draft well. They got Malachi Starks at the end of the first round, the safety from Georgia. They ended up with Mike Green, the defensive end from Marshall, in the second. Then they got Emory Jones, offensive lineman from LSU, in the third. And again, it just feels like, I don't know how it happens every year, but it feels like these guys just fall to the Ravens when everyone knows that they're going to be good. But they end up with these guys anyway. So kind of frustrating being a Bengals fan, knowing that they're going to continue to be solid in the AFC North. But it's hard to blame them. I mean, the guys are there, so why not take them? So that's pretty much all the teams I wanted to talk about. I'm trying to think if there were anyone else that had a really interesting draft. Oh, you know what? The Bucks also. I thought the Bucks had a good draft. They took Abuka at 19, obviously the wide receiver from Ohio State. And I think, you know, even though he still went in the first round, he felt a little underrated to me. I think he was overshadowed a little bit this past year by Jeremiah Smith. And I think some people are going to be shocked at how good he is, and, good route runner. Really good guy, and I think he's going to thrive in that offense, especially with Mike Evans and Godwin. And then they also took Tez Johnson in the seventh round, the speedster from Oregon. And so it'll be really interesting to see how they use all these guys in the offense. Obviously, Godwin coming off the injury, Mike Evans getting a little bit older. But I think that'll be really fun to watch them as well with Baker in Tampa. So yeah, those are the teams I want to talk about. Overall, I don't really want to give any draft grades because I think they're dumb. I just thought some teams had some interesting drafts and I think they're going to be fun to watch. But no one really knows how any of these guys are going to pan out. There are so many variables. It's just too much to really know what's going on. So, I think you can give draft grades maybe like 3-4 years later, but doing them 3-4 days after the draft just doesn't make sense. So, not going to do that, but really excited to see how a lot of these picks pan out. But yeah, so with that, we'll just about wrap it up for this Monday episode of the Daily Dime. As always, thank you for listening. And if you would, please consider following the show and rating 5 stars on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you may listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See ya.